This episode of the CMO Suite is brought to you by Uconix. Uconix provides digital solutions and teams to brand CMOs, VPs, and marketers looking for true transparency in the biddable media space. From paid social and PPC to complex platforms like the Trade Desk, brands from across the world have connected to Uconix. Visit them today at uconix.com. And No Kid Hungry. We're proud to promote No Kid Hungry and their many initiatives to help kids in need of meals. No Kid Hungry helps kids be kids, not be hungry. Visit them at nokidhungry.org. And finally, we're proud that Season 3 of the CMO Suite is presented by thecmocouncil.org as their official marketers podcast. The Chief Marketing Officer Council is the only global network of executives specifically dedicated to high-level knowledge exchange, thought leadership, and personal relationship building among senior corporate marketing leaders and brand decision makers. The CMO Council's 15,000-plus members control more than $550 billion in aggregated annual marketing expenditures and run complex distributed marketing and sales operations worldwide. For more information on membership, visit thecmocouncil.org. Let's start the show.
You're in the CMO Suite, the podcast for marketers who want to be in the know, presented by Connectivity Holdings.
This is Sean Halter, and welcome to the CMO Suite. This is the tail end of Season 3. We're starting it where it all began this season in New York City. We are, as always, with iHeart Studios. It looks fantastic. Speaking of looking fantastic, Stacey Horton is co-hosting with me today. Hello, Stacey.
Hi, Sean Halter.
You said you weren't going to talk, and yet I brought you in that quickly.
I have to say hello.
It took no time at all, and what I'm really excited about is how we're ending the season. So, you know, we started things off with the CMO for the NHL, which was fantastic. We got to really hear some great insight on what's happening there, and I'm excited because we're wrapping the season with Allison Griffin. Allison is a trailblazer when it comes to the intersection of technology and marketing. She's a previous VP of marketing for HP and now serves as VP Global Marketing for Intel. With experience in digital, expertise in web and social, she's creating thought leadership across the industry. Ladies and gentlemen, Allison Griffin. Can we throw a little
applause
in
wow,
there?
Wow. Thank you so much for having
How
me.
How was that?
It was amazing.
I think we're even going to do the little do-do-do.
Yeah.
Do you keep that on your phone by chance at all?
I don't. You know, I hadn't thought about it.
Well, we got it. You guys sent it to us, her publicity team, which, by the way, their machines, that pun is intended there, by the way. Your publicity team, we've been lucky. When we first started the show, like we would call people or email people like you, a publicist, and they would be like, who's this? And we'd be like, oh, we're doing a show called The CMO Suite. And they'd be like, who's been on it? We'd be like, oh, it's going to be some great guests.
Right.
And luckily we had some friends in the industry and they were able to help us build at least a little bit of a repertoire. And now we actually get publicists kind of calling us sometimes. But what was cool was I met you out in the West Coast not too long ago.
You did.
We were both out there for a CMO event with Evanta.
That's right.
Which was awesome. Jessica there is fantastic. She was kind enough to invite to be out there. And whenever I go to an event like that, sometimes I'll walk up to people that I think would be interesting on the show. I'll kind of give them my card. Usually they kind of look at me like, why are you stalking me? But you were really cool. You were kind. You're like, oh, yeah, that's great. You know, we'll give you a shout sometime. And literally, like, maybe, I don't know, maybe it was a week later, your publicity team was like, okay, so here's what we're going to do. Blah,
yeah.
Blah, blah. I was like, oh, okay. And they're like, when are you doing the show next? And I was like, well, we need to do a couple more episodes. I don't know, like mid-December. And they're like, okay, well, here's the dates that are free. It's like, man, if I grow up someday, they are on it.
Yes. We're very fortunate at Intel
Fantastic.
To have amazing agency partners.
They are really, really, really good. We'll definitely hit on some of that early agency partner stuff. I want to find out about your backstory a little bit. You and I talked. We did a pre-call. That was something else that your team was like, yeah, we like to do these. We're like, okay, great. So sometimes we do and sometimes we don't. The one beauty about having a guest like you on is if it's somebody that we've seen speak before, sometimes we don't do a pre-call because we know that you're a great speaker.
Articulate.
You're articulate. you'd be surprised.
Yes.
Our first season, we were maybe a little less choosy. We had a couple of guests that were like, yeah, these are going to be about 10 minutes because we just couldn't figure out how to get enough out of them. But I'm sure between you and I, this half an hour will go incredibly fast. So with that, we were out there. You talked quite a bit, which was really interesting. And then when we did our pre-call, we were talking about some of the backstory and some of the previous guests that we had. We talked about Jen Say, who's the global for Levi's, and just what an amazing
story
she has.
Yeah.
And you were saying you also had some amazing stories kind of growing up. So where did you actually grow up? Where are you from originally?
I am born and raised in the Bay Area.
Oh, okay.
I'm a rarity, I think, these days.
I think so, too. I mean, everybody seems to come there for tech, but
I was born there.
Yeah.
And born into tech.
Really?
So that's part of the story. So in the early 70s, late 60s, my mom and dad, you know, I'm an only child, you know, very close to my parents, all of that. And my mom was an employee at Hewlett-Packard. And so I saw in the early 70s, and it just kind of was ingrained into me that this strong female leader in Silicon Valley tech industry at a time when women were not taking those kind of jobs, were not having that kind of success, she was having that kind of success. And I saw it and it was great. And there's definitely, if I've ever been asked about my background, there's this linear connection because my mom was at HP to my current tech career. I do remember in the 70s going to the company picnics up in the Santa Cruz Mountains, HP-owned property, and Bill and Dave themselves, Hewlett and Packard, would flip burgers, patted me on the head.
Wow.
Yeah. And so HP was part of me growing up, and watching my mom's huge success there was obviously a subconscious, amazing experience for me to participate in. And of course, she ended up retiring after 43 years at HP.
That's incredible.
Yeah. And we calculated when I left HP, we had been there for 49 consecutive years.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was amazing. But what's also...
So you had a little bit of overlap?
Yes, we had a lot of overlap.
Wow.
Yeah. I joined HP in 2000 and she retired I'm forgetting the exact date, but you know, later 2000s. Yeah. So there's definitely overlap.
Did you see her at work?
Sometimes.
Like, did you work in the same kind of area?
Not all, no. And she was not in marketing and I didn't get the job because of her. I had started at a PR agency, was on the HP account, and then HP hired me. In fact, that's kind of a funny story. I remember being put on the HP account and I called my mom, "Mom, I'm on the HP account." Exactly. And then it was, "Mom, they're hiring me." You know, we just couldn't believe it. It was completely unrelated, random.
But it was also baked into your soul.
It was. And that is. But the other thing, and that's a story that I have been asked about, you know, just because it's so different.
Interesting, and yeah.
But the other part of what made me is my dad. And he was he's now retired, a small business owner. He owned his own.
God bless him. I can tell you how hard that is.
Exactly. And in sales, and he built.
Really, God bless him. I can tell you how hard
career.
That is.
Exactly. Thank you. You know. And so what I saw of my parents, and again, only child, so I got a lot of attention and support and the spotlight and all those kinds of things, which probably helps shape me. But I saw my mom do this very male-dominated industry in the early 70s, working, you know, that kind of stuff with tech. And then I saw my dad, who was a master at reading people and understanding his target audience and storytelling and compelling, picking out the thing that would get them interested, if that makes sense. And so if you take a step back and look at me now, that's what I do all day long. I understand tech and have grown up in Silicon Valley. There's nothing that I haven't been a part of since, you know, I was born there. Saw my mom and her very successful run in a male-dominated industry, and had my dad and his go-getter, you know, entrepreneurial, do whatever it takes to close the deal, understand what the target wants, be compelling, look them in the eyes, take your sunglasses off. You know, those kinds
Everything.
Of things. Yeah.
And it also probably, again, clearly it shaped the feeling probably from your perspective that whether some people think this is a male or non, you know, non-male dominated industry, you're just you. You're going to be the best you that you can be.
Yes.
That's all you've ever known.
Correct.
So anybody along the way that might've said, you're not going to be global. You're not going
right.
to be this.
Yeah.
It was probably like, why not?
Exactly. Yeah. Actually, the other big lesson that my parents helped me with was school. So I don't know exactly when it started, but I was going to be a pharmacist.
I saw that. I was going to ask you about that. It was literally in my notes because did you graduate with the degree, or that's at least what you went for?
Correct.
Right?
So I went to University of the Pacific.
I was wondering how the pharmacy piece was going to kind of come back when you talked about the HP piece. So
it's coming.
Okay.
Yeah. So my very supportive parents, sent me to a 5-year, year-round Doctor of Pharmacy degree at UOP. There were two colleges in the entire state, USC in Southern California and UOP in Northern California, that had that program. Otherwise, you had to do like a undergraduate degree and then
go somewhere else.
So 5 years year-round, And it was great. So year one, year two, year three, I had always worked at Long's Pharmacy since I was 15 and a half. My dad, who was in sales, helped me kind of get my first in there. But then I, you know, did a good job and was in the pharmacy. So long story short, I'm in pharmacy school. And one day, and this is not going to translate very well, but I'll try to make it translate well on radio, I'm counting pills, 5, 10, 15, and I'm like, oh my God.
Is this what it's going to be?
Yeah. Am I going to stand here for the rest of my life and continue to count pills? And so I decided it's just not what I want to do. And I was afraid to tell my parents. It was such a big commitment.
That's right.
And so from that perspective, how did you go back? And I'm going to restart a piece of this. If I can, but
speaking of tech,
the joy of video tech. But how did you tell them, or how did you decide that that's in fact what was going to happen?
It took an entire extra semester of me being there because I was terrified to tell my parents that I wasn't going to be a pharmacist and I didn't want to do it. And to be honest, my husband, he wasn't my husband at the time. He gave me the courage and the support to say, your parents love you. And it was so expensive, this school, and it was so, I was afraid that they'd be, one, disappointed, two, waste of money, whatever, you know.
And I think part of it being an only child, right?
Yes.
They put all their effort into you.
Yes.
And it was probably something that you felt, oh, I can't disappoint my parents.
Exactly right.
Yes.
And so, but I did tell them. And of course, they said, hey, no school is wasted education. If it's not what you want to do, let's figure out what you want. So the other kind of thing I learned about this is there's no mistake. There's no wrong path. There's no, I don't see it as a
path.
Failure.
That's right.
Yes.
And an introduction sometimes.
Yes.
Or an awareness of,
yes,
of something that happens with someone you meet.
Yes.
It changes your entire journey.
Exactly. And it was a great journey. And so, you know, got the support of my parents, ended up going to San Jose State because what I said was, I'm going to come home for a semester. I took one of every kind of class. It was like a business class, a philosophy class. I can't even remember, blah, 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 blah. Finance was one. And then I had an advertising class. And I walked into that classroom and it was as if the heavens parted and golden rays were shining down on me. Like, these are my people.
So you had done the pharmacy thing for 3 years.
3 out of 5.
And
year round, yes.
Then as you're counting and then you realize this isn't what I want to do.
Correct.
You talk to your parents, they're okay with it.
Yes.
But you didn't know what your next path was going to be at that time?
I didn't know. All I had ever known was pharmacy. So I didn't know what I was going to do. And I mean, I'm smart.
I'm smart
course, yeah, enough to, I knew I could figure out something. I had the science background. In fact, I think I have a minor in chemistry just accidentally, just from all the
pharmacy 3 years school. That you were there. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. So science is fine and good, but I also had this passion and this skill of public speaking and writing and English and all of that. Again, I think that's my dad's side of me. My mom is maybe the techie side and my dad was the, you know, articulate orator or something. I don't know. And
then it just popped.
It popped in. And when I took that advertising class and I just thought, this is what I want to do. These are the people that I am more in tune with. This is the kind of work that's exciting.
Isn't it funny sometimes how that happens? You know, we interviewed Fernando Machado, who's the CMO for Burger King.
Yeah.
And his story, you know, while not the same, it was interesting in the fact that he was a factory worker.
Yeah.
And they came and just gave a pitch on what they were doing, you know, for marketing for Mondelez. And he was like, oh,
sounds
maybe
amazing.
That's what I should be doing.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
It's amazing how that journey can take sometimes, isn't
it? Can,
it?
Exactly. And so that's
once you were
thing.
In that class, then you realize this is my passion.
It is. It was my passion. And then it was... do I go transfer to another school and, you know, for marketing or, you know, find like the best marketing school because I had found the best pharmacy school, for example. And then, but by that time I was older, I had met my now husband. In fact,
congratulations.
Thank you. In fact, next year is our 25th wedding anniversary and our 30 years together.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's just amazing. Yeah. By that time I'm like, look, I'm home. I'm in San Jose. Let me just quickly finish this out, you know, and just
get on with my career.
Into my career. Exactly.
So you knew at that point. And so then So that's what you did. You finished school.
I did.
And then did I see that you were an account manager maybe at an agency or something?
Exactly. So okay. Two different agencies. So I started, and it was funny. I thought that I was going to be in marketing for a pharmaceutical company, actually.
Which could have made sense.
Right. So I applied to McKesson. They were in San Francisco, and I thought, I'm going to go do PR or marketing or something at McKesson. And they never called me.
So you almost have this degree
in pharmacy. Yeah. It's like, oh my God.
Crazy how your life could have just been different.
Totally different. And so, but I knew it was a sorority sister connection, got a job at an agency in high tech. And it turns out like everything's for the best. High tech in the Bay Area is the smartest thing to do.
Yeah.
And I just took off from there.
And you ended up then with a job at HP.
I did. I was on the account. Then they hired me. And you know, the beauty of HP, I was there for 17 years in addition to
just
the time.
Almost unheard of. When I saw that you had been there that long, I was like, but how in the world you managed to stay there that long. And I guess that's...
Well, it's interesting. It's the beauty of a company like HP and even like Intel. So these big global brands, I was very fortunate. I was in a program they had called the Top Talent Program there. And so I was given the opportunity to work in... I started in the PC business, desktops and notebooks and those mobile devices. I then moved over to the enterprise, servers, storage, software, networking.
All in marketing?
Yeah, always PR, marketing, comms, yes. And then moved into the printer business. And the beauty of those were the three, HP was one company too before the recent split. And so the opportunity to learn different business models, you know, the razor blade model of printer and ink versus a commodity sale of a PC versus the very long sales lifecycle of an enterprise solution. And it was different segments, different business models, different, all these things, but I was still at the same company. So I had the same 401k plan, you know, or whatever. And it was like really great. And the other opportunity that HP gave me was I moved my family to Geneva, Switzerland for a year.
Wow.
To go. They had an issue actually that had happened. And this is sort of a funny story. That's considered the region, you know, in Europe. And the region called headquarters, me and my boss, and said, we've had a little implosion in our marketing department for whatever reason, and we actually need help from headquarters. And that never happens, that a geo wants help from headquarters.
So you were working out of the San Francisco office, and then you'd said that Switzerland is like the European
headquarters for
HP. They called, they said, we have an issue, send somebody?
Yeah.
And it was a marketing issue, I'm assuming?
Yeah, to rebuild their entire marketing department and coverage for the 87 countries, actually.
The 87 countries.
Yeah.
Is it odd that they would ask, I hate to say, somebody in America to help them rebuild the European piece of that?
It could have been but here's the deal. So yes, they needed help, number one. And I was very fortunate. The head of the printer business globally is a gentleman. He was VMS Joshi, VJ, and really, really amazing guy. And he and I together, along with only one other employee, wrote the Print 2.0 story, the next wave of printing for the business. And I was working just directly with Vijay. And so it was one of those things where I knew the story and knew the direction that headquarters was taking. And it's hard to get the sort of farther reaching places in the world to come along as quickly. So it was like, they need to go build their marketing team. And I obviously had that expertise, but they also need to make sure that when we build that team, they understand the story and the direction that the business is taking.
So you had almost written the manifesto,
exactly,
which is what allowed you the opportunity for them. So what do you, I mean, I guess you went, right?
I did.
So when they say, hey, do you want to go? Like one time I got tickets to go to Ireland and I said to my wife, like, hey, do you want to go to Ireland? And she said, when? And I was like, next week.
Yeah.
But I can't imagine just kind of uplifting. And I'm assuming you were married at the time.
I was.
No kids?
Two kids.
You had already had?
They were 5 and 3. So they were not yet in
school.
It was right before kindergarten. Yeah.
Wow.
And
so how long were you there?
So a year. So my husband, very fortunately, he has been a San Francisco juvenile probation officer for 27 years now. But the benefit of that is that he could take a leave of absence with no, like, it's very easy and, you know, public service type, you know, they're, if you've got a family need, they cover it. The benefits are amazing. So he said, I've got to take care of my kids when my wife is being moved to Europe. So we're going. And they said, of course.
And that was it.
And that was it. He took a leave of absence. We all moved, got an apartment in Oviv section of Switzerland and lived there.
And so you were there for a year, kind of helping to rebuild their whole team.
Hired, built, taught, you know, all the those many the countries. Yeah, the story that we were moving on.
How do you even start that for so many countries? How do you decide even where to start?
Well, that's okay. So fair point. I don't want to mislead on that. So I was setting up the region department that then manages all the EMEA countries. And so, and I had to train the region team and then the country teams. So I did have to hire in like four countries, but was to be responsible and lead the team of the entire geography.
So you were able to kind of go there, train a small group, and then that group was kind of deployed out there to kind of take care of of everything else to some extent.
Yeah.
And you were able to do that in a year.
Yeah. It was amazing. And then I got to come back and it was great because I got to bring back all of this experience
and knowledge.
Because you know what? What's the most frustrating thing with marketers is, especially in America, is we've have global titles, but we've never lived outside of America.
Yeah.
And when you go to somewhere like Geneva, you know, it's a different currency, a different language, and you're working with 87 countries and you understand more what it means. Not because I had managed the Americas region from the United States, but that's very different than managing the European region from Geneva. And so what I love about HP was the opportunity to be in the three business units, to have the opportunity to go overseas, and to truly sit in a different country away from the center of the universe, you know.
How we feel like it is, but in some ways it's completely different over there.
Totally. And what they do and their concerns, and when headquarters comes in and says, thou shalt, you know, and then you realize that doesn't work here. For example.
Yeah.
And so to come back with that learning and to shape my then future trajectory and my career was really beneficial. And so all those years at HP, I could stay there so long to go back to your, wow, you were there for 17 years, because it felt like different and new
and
fresh each time.
I do think there's something to be said for getting, to your point, getting a chance to go to Europe and just even if it's just a visit, to just explore and realize that America's fantastic.
Yeah.
It is the center of the universe in many ways, but there's a whole other world that's out there, and they live in a completely different way.
Correct.
You go to Italy and everybody's like 2 o'clock and they're gone. Everything closes for 2 hours and you're like, how does the world operate that way? And then you come back to New York and it's just hustle, hustle, bustle, 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 which is just so kind of unique and interesting in some ways. So
exactly.
You spent a year there, and then what was the precursor to get you to kind of come back to the US? Was it?
Well, it was never a thing that I was going to stay there. It was go fix a problem, however long it takes, try to get it done, you know, as quickly as possible. And a year just felt right.
And then come back.
And then for my husband too, in his career, it's like, okay, at some point we had to get the kids back. My son was starting kindergarten. In fact, I will say this is going to sound crazy, but we came back in the month of August while we were that year.
Yep.
And my mom moved into our house, and Sean, my oldest son, the kindergartner.
Great name, by the way, but
yes, started kindergarten, and we left.
Really?
Yes, we went back to finish the assignment, and it was really weird, and it was because—
So your mom watched your kids for a little while for you to finish it up?
Only Sean. We brought Ryan back
because
with us.
His age was—
He was three, and we didn't want to, you know, we just wanted my mom. And to be honest,
my mom—
What a
magical thing in some ways, though,
she loved it. Like, Sean loved it,
too. How long was it?
It was only from August. Chris and Ryan, my husband and son, came back in the end of October. So it wasn't that long. And then I was back before like December, basically.
So it's not that long, but it's a moment and a memory that they'll always have.
Exactly.
So then what was the precursor? You were there for so long. And then what was the precursor for you to make the move and to go to Intel?
When did that jump happen? I never thought I was going to leave HP.
We could talk for an hour.
I know.
They're good stories.
So
I want to make sure we get some time on Intel because it's you were there for a very long time, and then what made you decide to?
So I was always a partner with Intel, right? So on the PC side and the server side, I didn't really make a move from an outbound marketing perspective without partnering with Intel anyway. So I understood Intel very, very well.
Were you already ingrained just in their philosophy, working with their people and everything that you guys were doing?
Yes. Right. Over the course of time, at HP, yes. Microsoft too, as an example, right? Like there are just some big partners that are integral to, you know, the product we were selling. So anyway, so Intel calls, and it was right after the split too, or a couple years after the split. And it was like, we had gotten the teams through all that. And you know, I don't really take the headhunter calls and stuff, but this was Intel themselves. And
so
I
knew somebody, obviously you knew a bunch of people there. And then did they literally like say, hey, by the way, I don't know if you'd be open to this.
Yeah. And so I was like, what do they want? Like what's going on there? And for the first time ever we're now 51 years, but this was a couple of years ago. So whatever, in 48 years, they decided that they needed to staff up and execute outbound marketing in B2B. Company had never done it because it didn't have to. It only did PC related B2C.
And that was like
work.
The commercials you'd see with the
Jim Parsons. Yeah. Yes, exactly. PC leadership. Yeah. And, you know, Intel Inside, like we've spent billions of dollars and decades making sure that when you hear the bong, we call it the Intel bong,
yep.
And or see the words Intel Inside, you know, it's the most powerful PC on the planet. And that was by design. But so it's a blessing and a curse because that's what everybody knows. And meanwhile, we had this really amazing enterprise business and B2B solutions for business outcomes and for businesses. But it was kind of like the best kept secret. And it was because the bulk, I don't know. Now I'm, you know, 80% of our revenue was the PCs. And so, yes, of course, we had to make sure our ecosystem knew what we were doing on the B2B side. But we didn't have to go to end user customers or really go outbound and talk about it.
So they had not really had anybody in place.
Never.
For business to business to some extent.
Correct.
And so you're probably uniquely positioned for just that.
Yeah.
Especially on a global level because of some of your previous experience in being over there as well.
And it was, I think I was the secret decoder ring between the then CMO, who was a consumer PC. He had come from Staples, for example, and was doing big, you know, splashy Jim Parsons commercials and activations. Great. And their data center leader, who didn't understand why we would need marketing because they'd never needed it before. And they didn't really know how to talk to each other. And yeah. I had done PCs and I had done enterprise servers.
Do you think they built the position specifically?
No.
For, okay.
No.
They knew they wanted to hire somebody.
They needed to hire an outbound marketer for the B2B enterprise space. But by me getting into that role, I could speak the language to the CMO and be a translator because I'd done PC marketing and consumer marketing. So it was great. And so It was necessitated by the fact that Intel's overall revenue profile was growing. Our growth needed to be in this new B2B vertical markets, education sector, retail
sector. Because
it was
untapped to some extent.
Correct. And the world needed to know. And so it was like, I couldn't ever have imagined leaving HP, but I thought if a brand as big as Intel, much bigger than HP, no disrespect, but if they are looking for help to do and build something that I absolutely know how to do and I can make a contribution there, oh my gosh, how could I not?
What a huge chance to make a real, an even greater impact.
Exactly.
Around the world.
Exactly. And so it was a shocker. I had to call my mom, by the way. She had long since retired from HP, but I did call and say—
It's still almost like buying a—
Yes.
Chevy if you're a Ford house or
yes.
something though, huh?
It's like, what do you think? Should I go? And she said, oh my gosh, of course go. Take it. That's yeah. what HP would want you to do too. They're still great partners and take the knowledge you have and go build something great.
And how long have you been there now?
3.5 years.
Does it feel like it's gone slow? Does it feel like
Quickly.
It's gone fast? Crazy fast.
Yeah, crazy fast. So I've been in three basically roles, basically one role a year.
Because you started in one role.
In enterprise.
And then does it evolve
yes.
or expands?
So what happened was I set up the enterprise team, the B2B team, lead nurturing, you know, stuff that they had never done, like all—
Because they just didn't know that they needed it.
They didn't ever need to do it. It's yeah. not that the team couldn't do it. It's that wasn't what they were being asked to do. So I came in and built that. And then it was clearer and clearer and clearer over that year that our overall brand needed to include B2B and that how we were operating was I was off in this sort of side doing B2B outbound marketing. And then the regular machine of Intel was just this B2C stuff. you know, the typical thing you would know of PCs and gaming and whatever. And they said, but our brand needs to morph. We have to open the aperture of the brand to include not only our powerful PCs, but these B2B technologies and emerging technologies like artificial intelligence and virtual reality and drones and internet
everything that's happening.
Yeah.
Does the bong still go with the...
Yes.
So the bong stays.
Bong stays.
Bong stays.
Forever.
And so you've evolved really into that role.
Yeah.
Do you feel like at this point you've kind of built that role to suit where your strengths are? Are you at that point with Intel where you feel like you're able to kind of say, look, this is my opinion on where we need to focus on next? And they
do. There are,
I hate to say they, like it's, you know, some
different
boardroom up at the top of
no, they're, it's
68th
a great,
Avenue or
it's
something.
It's a great team. Yes. And so I work with the management team that are, you know, we set our overall company ambitions and strategy, obviously from our CEO. And my job is to go translate that externally into what it means for business outcomes. For
what
example.
What do you love about it right now? What do you love that you're doing right now that you just, because you just got back from India as well, didn't you? You just fly in yesterday?
Yesterday or the day before. I'm losing track of time, yes.
Is it the global part of what you're doing that you love?
I love that.
Is there an element?
But I'll tell you.
Yeah, I'd love to hear it.
I'm working on the Internet of Things sort of topic area, and it's the most exciting area in the world right now, in my opinion, led by artificial intelligence and the ability for technology to create... to help business outcomes in ways it hadn't before. So not, I don't want to get techie. This is not a technology show, but the point is Intel is enabling compute power to happen in places that it couldn't have happened before, not just in a data center or in the cloud, but right there where the work happens, or like an autonomous vehicle. For example, a server is in the trunk, quote, air quote, it might not be the trunk, but in the car.
Yeah.
And these machines, if you will, cars and manufacturing lines and retail kiosks and all of these device endpoints now have different level of compute power ushered in by Intel, to be able to change how the companies of those products are interacting in the world, and therefore what you and I get as a result of it. So a doctor can now use machine learning and AI algorithms to scan like MRI images or x-rays or things so much faster and can help more patients per hour. As an example.
Well, listen, I told you that flew by fast. That was a half an hour. Yes. We didn't even like scratch the surface of the 20 questions I had because we got to talk about basically your journey. And really sometimes the journey is some of the funnest part to some extent.
Good.
So how is that travel, as we wrap, how is that travel impacting you? Are you still enjoying it? Is it getting harder?
It. Yeah, you know, I get there's...
How's that for your kids?
There's certain bouts of where it's really heavy and then it slows down. So, you know, and my kids are great. One is in college now, 18. Sean is 18 years old.
That went fast, didn't it?
It did go fast from Europe, from kindergarten to college.
We skipped like 12 years in there.
So he's away, and my other son is 16 and a junior and busy, and he's in a band and he's got band practice and, you know,
what's
all those
he play?
Things. He plays the bass.
Okay.
I mean, he can play pretty much any instrument, but he is a very talented bass player.
Did he get that from you? Did he get that from your husband?
Was a professional drummer in the 60s.
Wow.
Yeah. He recorded under Capitol Records, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Isn't that kind of cool when...
Yes.
Again, you know, think of your job, think of your career, think of what you've done. That went kind of full circle.
Yeah.
And now it almost skips a little bit of a generation.
Well, I played the violin and viola for 14 years.
It's not as cool as the bass.
I know. Or the drums.
Okay.
I know.
Or the drums. I mean.
I played cello.
Yay!
Yeah, whatever, ladies. That part is not really that exciting.
Whatever.
But the bass is cool.
I know.
Right? So he's in a band?
Yes. Last summer they toured the Pacific Northwest up to Seattle. So that was... wonderful for
How
him.
Was that for you as a
whole
time?
Yes, of course. It was amazing. And just so proud of him. I'm proud of Sean as well.
Yeah, you don't want to forget the other son who's not in the band, but still very cool and doing
exactly,
cool stuff.
Exactly.
Listen, we were incredibly excited to meet you. This went incredibly fast and we really, really appreciate it. We appreciate you making a stop back in here. Allison Griffin, what an incredible story and really an incredible journey. You should be so incredibly proud of yourself and everything you've accomplished.
Thank you.
That's the wrap of season 3 of the CMO Suite. Thank you all for joining us so much. Thank you everybody for everybody who helped to make this happen. My family, iHeart, Stacy, and Allison, thank you so much for being our last guest of the season. Take us out of the show.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for hanging out in the CMO Suite. The podcast podcast for marketers who want to be in the know. Presented by Connectivity Holdings.
You're a C-level manager. You shouldn't have to know the difference between behavioral or contextual targeting, but your agency should. Uconnects provides brands and biddable teams direct access to platforms like The Trade Desk, Google, Amazon, Facebook, OTT, and more. Their U.S.-based traders can train your in-house team or provide complete transparency with no minimums and CPM-based service pricing for true transparency. Something Mighty Hive, The Trade Desk, and Centro simply don't offer. Tired of being the smartest one in the room? Reach out to Uconnects today for a free demo. Uconnects, the world's leader in true, transparent, biddable media.